introduce myself. I don't need, know that I need to do that again. But I do want to recognize my co-authors. As Bruce mentioned, he sort of set the stage for my presentation. He talked about two specific types of temperature sensors and their performance relative to each other, a lot in terms of stability. I'm going to actually deploy those sensors and see what we get. But before doing that, I have to recognize my co-author, Ryan Lindsley, who works with me at Apogee Instruments, and of course, Bruce Bugby. I also have to acknowledge these three gentlemen, Joby Carlisle, Bart Knapp, and Jonathan Wright, all of whom provided instrumentation and or data. It's a bit of motivation for what I'm going to say. Air temperature is the most widely measured environmental variable. And Bruce indicated this morning in his presentation that our sensors can be very accurate, but having an accurate sensor is only half of the issue. You have to properly shield that sensor from solar radiation and then ventilate that sensor so that it's in thermal equilibrium with air when you deploy it in an environment. Otherwise, you're not going to get an accurate measurement. So there's two main types of radiation shields that we use to shield and ventilate sensors. One is a passive shield that relies on natural aspiration from wind, and one is an active shield that has an internal fan that has mechanical aspiration. So I tried to capture some of the concepts in the figure here. This would, of course, be the passive device. They're typically these louvered, they can be either plastic or aluminum louvered plates, sensor inside, designed to keep solar radiation off, but they're open to the side so that hopefully the wind couples it to the air. The active devices tend to be a cylindrical shape with a fan in the top, draws in air from the bottom, air blows past the sensor and keeps it aspirated. But the main motivation for my talk is we've been making routine temperature measurements for probably two centuries, and we've been making measurements with electronic sensors for decades. Yet we look in the scientific literature and we find in the last 15 years over 30 peer-reviewed journal articles on temperature measurement. And I've highlighted five from major peer-reviewed journals. These two from 2013, these two from 2014. I mean, there's still a lot of progress and development going on with respect to air temperature measurement. And so we, in many cases, aren't getting it right yet. And I'm going to do a more of a comparison of temperature measurements in one of these passive devices and versus temperature measurements in one of these active devices and show you just how well we're doing at measuring temperature. But before getting there, I'll give you just a bit of background on the two. So, of course, the passive devices, they don't require power, so it makes them great for solar-powered locations. And they tend to be lower cost, but often they're not so accurate. They overheat when the wind is not blowing. The active devices, they require power, obviously, to run the fan, with 250 to 500 milliamps being typical, or 3 to 6 watts. They tend to cost more because you've got a fan inside, and often they're a bit more complex, but they are more accurate in low wind and high solar radiation because the fan allows for better coupling to the air. But one major point that's important to consider, these guys tend to be far more common, and we often use them with a humidity probe, so a probe that's designed to measure air temperature, relative humidity at the same time. The challenge that you will see with that in a moment is that humidity probes are big and bulky. A lot of thermal mass is harder to cool off when the sun is shining. So from here I'm going to show you data from three different field studies, and I'll try to look at three different things, and that is the performance of the passive shields, the performance of different models of passive shields compared to each other, and then how well the active shields compare to one another. So Bruce talked a little bit about Peter Sinks in his presentation this morning. It's a high elevation mountain site near Logan, Utah. We have data from February 2014 to right now. At the site, we have one active and one small six-plate passive shield. Both of them have the exact same temperature sensor inside. It's a small thermistor with a 0.1C accuracy specification. And the data that you will see are 15-minute mean temperatures. When we look at the data, we've actually separated them into the period of time when the site was snow-covered and then when the site was bare, vegetation underneath, because it makes a big difference, as you'll see. What we do to analyze the data is we take the temperature measurement in our passive shield, we subtract the temperature measurement in the active shield, so you get a temperature difference, and then we plot it versus wind speed. So wind speed here, the temperature difference here. This is summertime, no snow, wintertime, over snow, and you're looking at only daytime data, so only when the sun is shining. I mean, you can immediately see when the wind is low, you tend to get big errors, or can get big errors. And there's a lot of scatter there, so I'll explain that in a minute. And when the wind starts blowing harder and harder, the errors tend to go away when we compare the passive shield to the active shield. So a good way to analyze the data is to bin it according to wind speed, and then take the averages to get an idea of what the error looks like in terms of trend. So what we do is we group it into half meter per second wind speed bins, take the average, and there you see the differences for winter or summer, or better, on the same plot. So you can see the take-home message here, I think, is twofold. There's significant errors with the passive shield when the wind is blowing, and the surface underneath the sensors makes a big difference, snow versus no snow. Our next field study was conducted at Campbell Scientific. We have a bit more data from September of last year till now. Here we have two different models of active shields. We also have three different models of the passive shields. And we have two replicates of each, and I've highlighted the different replicates, or the different models, excuse me, with different colors. These ones are 10-plate passive shields, and as before, all of the shields that you see have the exact same temperature sensor inside, and it has a 0.2C accuracy specification. But in addition, in this study, we also have one active shield over here that has one of the relative humidity probes inside, so it's much larger than these small thermistors we're using in all the other shields. It will give us an idea of what kind of errors we can expect in the most common temperature measurement scenario, which is a passive shield with a relative humidity sensor. As before, to analyze the data, we just take the temperature measurement from these passive shields and we compare it to the temperature measurement in the active shields by taking the difference. Before we get to the data, I just want to show you it. If we take the temperature from one of these minus the other and plot it as a distribution, this is what we get. So you can see the center of the distribution is near zero, as it should be, and the spread here is on the order of the accuracy specification of the sensors we used inside the shields. The point being, it doesn't really matter if you compare these passive shields to this one or this one. The result is the same because these two match quite well. And here's what we get. So I mentioned before I had three different models of passive shields. This is what they look like. The performance is similar to what you saw before, but the main take-home message here is that not all of the passive shields are created equal. You know, one of them measures quite a bit cooler than the others, even at low wind. But like we saw before, you get to a certain wind speed when all of them have an error. And if we were to put an approximation on the graph of what that wind speed is, you might say it's about 3 meters per second, or you could maybe even argue a little bit stronger wind, 4 meters per second, before the errors of these shields go away relative to an active shield. So I mentioned I'd talk a little bit about the most common case, which is a relative humidity sensor inside of a passive shield. So what we're doing here is comparing two models of the exact same type, two replicates of the exact same type of passive shield, but a different sensor in each one. So we have a small thermistor, low thermal mass, it's relatively easy to cool it off once the wind starts blowing, And then a relative humidity probe with an associated temperature sensor on the end of the probe, much larger and bulkier, so there's a lot more thermal mass to cool down. You can see the same type of data we've been looking at, but if we put the trends on the same graph, and there's a definite difference between the relative humidity probe and the thermistor. I mean, it's on the order of a quarter of a degree C that the relative humidity probe is warmer than the small thermistor in the exact same type of passive shield. And you see there's an offset here, even at high winds. You might ask, well, it looks like there's just a calibration offset between the sensors. But if you look at data for these two at night when the sun's not shining and the wind is blowing, that offset goes away. So I'm not sure why this humidity probe heats up during the day, but it does because the offset goes away at night. Real quick, I want to talk a little bit about the scatter that I mentioned previously. So there's a lot of scatter when you get to low wind speeds when you compare these passive shields to an active shield. Well, part of that is actually due to solar radiation, but part of it is just due to the lag time that it takes for a non-aspirated or passive shield to respond. So if you've got very little wind, the air is somewhat still and stagnant, and the temperature is changing, the active shields, the sensor inside, is going to respond much faster because it's being actively aspirated by the fan, whereas the passive shield is going to be responding much slower. So if you're averaging over shorter time periods, you're going to start to average in a difference due to a lag and not necessarily due to actual error. You can see that displayed here. We have the exact same shield with a 1 minute mean and a 15 minute mean. There's a lot more scatter here in the 1 minute mean than the 15 minute mean. But when you analyze the data in terms of binning the wind speeds and taking the average, the trend is almost exactly the same. So using these trends is a good way to estimate the errors. We have to be careful with our interpretation of the scatter. Some of it is likely due to solar radiation differences, but some of it is definitely due to the lag time as well. Real quick, we also did a field study at Apogee Instruments wherein we compared different models of the active shields. We took data in winter 2013 over a two-month period, and then again this past summer over a two-month period. We had two active shields of each model, and we've got three models, one from MET1, one from RM Young, and one from Apogee Instruments. And we all shields, as before, use the exact same thermistor with a 0.1 accuracy specification. What we found is, as with the passive shields, not all the active shields work exactly the same. So what we're plotting here are the differences of these are just trends, by the way. I'm not showing all the individual data points this time. We're showing the differences of the Apogee and RM Young models compared to the MET1 for summer and winter under low wind. So the x-axis here is solar radiation. We're showing the differences of the function of solar radiation and little wind speed, because that's the worst case scenario. And what we find is, in summertime, while there are differences among the active shields, all of them read within about 0.05 of each other or so. But in the wintertime, the errors get worse because you've got a highly reflective surface underneath the shields. And here we use the MET1 as the reference to compare these other shields against, simply because when the wind's not blowing and the sun is high in the sky, we have a lot of energy incident on the shields. The MET1 tends to be the coolest. But as with passive shields, the take-home message here is not all active shields perform the same. And so just a brief summary to wrap things up. Temperature from passive shields tends to be warmer than temperature from active shields, and this is particularly true at lower wind speeds. The errors can be significant, as you saw, on the order of like 2 Celsius in the wintertime when you have a highly reflective surface. Temperature from the passive shields, from an RH probe in a passive shield is warmer because of the high thermal mass as opposed to a small sensor. And while there's multiple radiation shields out there, both of the passive and the active type, not all of them perform the same. I mean, I've only compared three different models of passive shields and three different models of active shields, and we see differences, but there's a host of products available, so you have to be careful about what type of temperature shield you use when making measurements. That's all I have. Looks like I have time for maybe one question before we go to break. Correct, so yeah, sure. Graham's asking about the time constant of the sensor, and he said that he didn't understand my explanation regarding the thermal mass differences between an RH probe and a smaller sensor. So essentially what we have is when we compare the sensor with a large thermal mass to a sensor with a smaller thermal mass, and we're comparing them to a shield that is aspirated, the aspirated shield is going to respond much faster if the wind is not blowing, but the temperature of the air is changing. And so over a 1 minute time period, you might be looking at differences in terms of lag of the sensor with high thermal mass because it's not changing as quickly as the sensor that has smaller thermal mass or that is aspirated. And so when we take average over a longer time period, the scatter goes away just because we are actually seeing the true differences because we're averaging a lot more data points. Any others?